So tonight is December the 16th, and we are in Yechezkel. We are in Perek Mem, chapter 40, Pasuk Lamechez, verse 38. Our goal this evening, even though I do need to leave a couple of minutes early, our goal this evening is going to be try to finish the Perek. Don't laugh. Don't laugh.
I'm sorry, I'm trying to pay attention.
I made it to the end.
What's that? Oh, we'll see. We'll see what we can do.
We're
going to
have that question at the end.
No. If we can, we can. I mean, that's 12 sukkim. We should. We may be able to do it. We'll try. Okay. There's going to be a lot, obviously, a lot on the picture that we're going to have to see as we go through. So, until now, let's refresh our memories, so you all remember it very, very well. But until now, we have been discussing the gates coming into, from the outside to the Chatzar HaChitzona, to the outer courtyard. We talked about the eastern one, the southern one, and the northern one. Well, it wasn't exactly in that order. Thank you. So we've discussed those. We have not yet discussed any of these lishchos, these chambers in the corners. We haven't discussed those, or these larger ones. We haven't discussed those yet. And we've only begun now, as we're about to do, to discuss the inner, the chambers going from the Chatzar HaChitzona, from the outer courtyard, to the Chatzar HaPnimi, to the inner courtyard. We're going to be on the north side, which is where Yechezkel ended off last week. He was on the northern side. He's been waiting there for a week for us to start again. So Yechezkel is going to be entering into the Chatzar HaPnimi, into the inner courtyard, from the northern side. At which point he will then, not tonight, but next time we learn, he'll move on into the main sanctuary, up this way. But right now, we're in this area. One of the things that we're going to be discussing this evening are some special lishchos, special chambers. There are four special chambers which are not clearly defined in the Pesukim. And the diagram reflects the fact that we don't know that much about these chambers. And they are this one here, these two here, and this one here. As you see from the way that the picture is, all we know about them is which direction they open from. We're going to see how this one here opens from the north, these two here open from the south, this one here opens from the north, and my voice is echoing off of this, and that's not your fault, and we also have a general idea where they are. Of the four chambers, this one is the one that's most defined, that we know pretty much where it's supposed to go. These two are not so defined, and in his footnotes, Rabbi Eisman writes that these are an approximation, that it should not be taken from the picture, this is for sure where they go, it's really an approximation, and we don't know much about those chambers at all. But we are going to discuss whatever we know about them tonight. Question? Somebody had a question? Somebody said something? No. Okay. Now, in addition, tonight we're not going to be moving from the northern area to the eastern or the southern ones. We know that they are very similar, but we're not going to be discussing them this evening. Yechezkel, as I said, enters through the north and then moves up to the west to the inner sanctuary, which will be for 3 weeks from now when we resume our class. That's going to be the focus this evening. So he writes, Lamechez 38, the lishka upischa, and a chamber and its opening, be'ilim hashi'arim, in the columns, the pillars of the gates, sham yadichu es ha'ola, there they would rinse the ola. Now the ola, let's give a quick synopsis of karbonos, of sacrifices. There are various types of sacrifices that are offered in the Beis HaMikdash, in the temple. The three general types of sacrifices are animals, that's one, birds, and flour, F-L-O-U-R. Those are the three general types of sacrifices that are offered. With animals particularly, there are various categories of karbanos, of sacrifices. There is the ola, which is mentioned over here. An ola is a sacrifice that is completely burned, it's completely consumed. You slaughter the animal, you throw the blood on the altar properly, and then the animal is completely burned on the altar. None of it is eaten. Then there is something called, there's the shlamim. The shlamim, some of it gets burned on the altar, some of it gets eaten by the kohanim, and some of it gets eaten by the person offering the sacrifice. So if any one of us would offer a shlamim karban, then we would get some of it to eat ourselves, and it would be a requirement to eat it. An example of a shlamim is the karban pesach. The karban pesach is a sacrifice that all Jews eat from on the night of Pesach. You have a karban chatas or a karban asham, both of which are brought for various types of sins, and those karbanos are partially burned on the altar, on the mizbeach, and partially eaten by the kohanim, but not eaten by the person offering it. And there are a few other subcategories of karbanos. What makes the ola significant over here is that the ola had to be slaughtered on the northern side of the Beis HaMikdash, of the temple. And so, since we're in the northern gate, you need something which will be the processing place for the ola karbana. So that's what the pasuk is saying over here, that there was a chamber, and it's opening, and it was towards the pillars of the gate, and that's where they would rinse the ola. The ola, they would slaughter it, and they would rinse it in this chamber here, which was facing the pillars of the gates. It would be facing this direction. That's where it would take place. Okay. And now, what about the other... let's keep reading. We'll see about other chambers in a moment. Lamed Tes 39. Uve ulam hashar. Now moving backwards, going back into the northern gate. Shnayim shulchanos mipo, shnayim shulchanos mipo. There were two tables on this side and two tables on that side. Lishchot aleihem ha'ola ve'achatas ve'ha'asham. To slaughter on them the ola, the chatas, and the asham. The ola, which is completely consumed by the altar. The chatas and the asham, which are sin offerings, which were partially consumed on the altar and partially eaten by the kohanim. Vel ha-kaseif mi-chutza, to the shoulder further out. La-ola le-fesach ha-shar ha-tzafona, for one who goes up on the northern gate. Shnayim shulchanos, two tables. Ve'al ha-kaseif ha-acheres, and on the other shoulder, asher li'ulam ha-shar, that was to the gate of the hall. Shnayim shulchanos, two tables. I will show you where these are in just a moment. Alright, I'll show it to you now. I was going to read a little further, but let's show it to you. Let's get our bearings here before we go any further. What is the shoulder that we're talking about? Well, when you enter in through the northern gate, you first enter a hall. That's that large hall, which we'll get the dimensions of shortly. We have the dimensions already. It's 10 amos. And then you have an area here. It's maybe a little bit difficult to see, but you notice that the wall juts in on either side. See how the wall juts in? Here's the wall, right below my thumb. And then when you get to the edge of the hall and you get to the steps, now the wall goes further to the right and further to the left. You continue on in, and when you get to up over here, all of a sudden the wall juts out further, and now you have less space. So you have, if you'll recall the dimensions, you have 13 amos wide hall that expands to 15 amos when you get to the middle area here, and then it shrinks to 10 amos when you get to the area over here. So the widest area, those are called shoulders, like the shoulder of a road. If you're traveling on a road, so a high-speed road often has shoulders so that people can pull over. In case of emergency, they don't block the road. If then you go over a bridge, it's more narrow, and now there's no shoulder anymore. The shoulders disappear. And then when you get off the bridge, the shoulders reappear. So a shoulder is where the area expands to your right and to your left, even though the main thoroughfare remains the same, but there's now a shoulder. So when it says ha-kaseif over here, the shoulder, it's referring to the area that's now wider that was from where the other area was. So there were two shulchanos, as is mentioned, two tables on either side of the shoulder. That means that up over here, not on the steps, beyond the steps, there were two tables, one here and one here, and then two more tables over here and over here. So if you're walking through, and now you're at the widest area, you had two tables over there, and two tables over there as you're walking through. Plus, there were two more tables, meaning four, two on either side, also on the Ulam Hashar, on the, and also, I'm sorry, there were two more tables, not the, in the, at the gate area. And that would be, I don't remember where he put the tables. He put them, those other four tables here. Yeah, right. In the ulam, in the hall itself, which would be here. So you have two tables against either wall coming in to the hall. So that's four tables in the hall, two on the right, two on the left. And as you go further, now you have shoulders. So you have two here and two here again. Total of eight tables. Those shulchanos were for the slaughter of the animals. Now, it does not mean they slaughtered the animals on the tables. That would be a very cumbersome thing to do. What it means is, and this is true in the second Beis HaMikdash as well, that when you process an animal after the animal is slaughtered, so then the animal has to be cut up properly, and the organs have to be removed, etc. So it makes sense that it be done on an area that is somewhat cold, because it will keep everything from spoiling. If you have ever been in a slaughterhouse, a signature feature of a slaughterhouse is that it's cold. You don't have there's no such thing as a warm slaughter. Slaughterhouses are cold. And they're cool. Isn't they cold? They're not freezing, but they're cool because that's what makes the meat preserve better. If you have a warm or stuffy type of atmosphere, you're going to have a lot of bugs and a lot of flies and stuff like that. So it's better that it be cool. And the meat is going to spoil faster. So in the Beis HaMikdash, you had these tables which were made of stone, and that would preserve the meat better. These eight tables were there for that purpose. They were there for the processing of the animal. It was not a simple matter. Again, having been to a slaughterhouse, after an animal is slaughtered, so then, and the blood is removed, after that, there's still a lot that has to be done before the animal is ready to be, the meat is ready to be salted, etc. There's a lot of things that have to be done. It has to be cut up properly, and then different organs have to be removed. In today's slaughterhouses, there's a member of the FDA there that's checking different parts of the animal to make sure it meets different standards, etc. There's a lot going on. It's not just kill the animal and then move on. There's a lot that has to happen after the animal is slaughtered. So these tables are what they're used for. Mem Aleph 41. Now this is not, we're going to mention the tables again, but it's the same tables. It's not new tables. It's summing it up. Arba shulchanos mipo ve'arba shulchanos mipo. There were four tables on one side and four tables on the other side. L'chesef hashar, to the shoulder of the gate. Shmona shulchanos, a total of eight tables. Aleihem yishchatu, on them they would slaughter. Ve'arba shulchanos la'ola avnei gazis. And four tables for the ola, for the carbon ola, which were stones, hewn stones. Orech ama achas, they were one ama long. V'chetzi, 1.5 amos long. V'rochav ama achas v'chetzi, and they were 1.5 amos wide, so they were 1.5 amos by 1.5 amos. V'gova ama echas, and they were 1 ama tall. Aleihem, upon them. V'yanichu es hakelim, and upon them would be laid the utensils, asher yishchatu es ha'ola bam v'hazavach, that you would use to slaughter the animals, the ola and the different types of karbanos. So on the tables, these other four tables were inside that chamber. This chamber had four tables. on those tables were the utensils that were needed. There were knives, and there were the cups they needed to catch the blood, because that was this integral part of the sacrifices. You caught the blood and then threw it on the altar. So that had whatever utensils were necessary for the Kohanim to do what they had to do, they were on those four tables in that chamber. Mem Gimel 43, V'hashefatayim tofach echad muchanim babayis saviv saviv. And the hooks, hashefatayim, tofach echad, one tefach, one hand breath, they were prepared in the bayis, around, vela shulchanos, bisar ha-karban, and to the tables, the meat of the karban. In the second Beis HaMikdash, and now also in the third Beis HaMikdash, there are hooks. The purpose of the hooks is after you slaughter the animal, you then have to skin the animal. Now, skinning an animal is a difficult job. Again, my trip to the slaughterhouse in Baltimore, the Schlachtheis, it was somewhat fascinating that the skin peeled off, meaning it wasn't a cumbersome type of thing. It did peel off smoothly. The flesh was smooth under the skin after it was pulled off. It wasn't like a jagged kind of thing. It wasn't a messy thing. Once the blood had drained out of the animal, and then they skinned it, the skin came off. But it was a difficult job. You had a guy who was doing it. He was a powerful guy. I mean, he was a very muscular guy. And this animal was hanging. They had it hanging on a hook on a conveyor belt. And the animal was there. And they had the skin, a slit down the skin so that it could be pulled off. But then the animal was hanging up, and he was using his weight and gravity. He was pulling at it. It was suspending him. And he was pulling at it, and tugging at it, and ripping it so that it would come off the animal. It came off in one uniform piece, and it came off smoothly, but it was a difficult thing. You had to really tug at it to get it removed. So you had these hooks to suspend the animal from after it was slaughtered in order to skin it properly to remove the skin. This is standard procedure in any type of processing of any kind of animals. That's what would have to be done. And so that's the hooks were there as well, to do that, to be able to suspend the animal. Mem Dalet 44, Umichutz al Ashar HaPnimi, and outside the inner gate, Lishchais Sharim, the chambers of the singers. Sharim, shar is to sing, a shir is a song. The chambers of the singers, it's plural, the chambers of the singers, the chatzer hapnimi in the inner courtyard, ashal kesef shar hatzafon, that is on the shoulder of the northern gate, ufnehem derech hadarim, and they're facing the south. Let's stop here in the middle of the verse. So we're told that there were two chambers, at least, it doesn't say two, but it says it plural, so there's at least two. They were inside the inner courtyard, so not in the gate, they were actually in the inner courtyard, on the shoulder of the northern gate. That means it would have to be somewhere on the side here of the northern gate. I suppose it may have been on the other side. And Rabbi Eisman puts it over here, meaning towards the east. The doorways are towards the south, and that's all we know. We know there were at least two, and we know that they were facing south, and we know that they were on the northern side of the inner courtyard. So as he writes, this is conjecture, he puts it over here, a double gate, and they are for the sharim, for the singers. For the singers? The Levium. What do they use these chambers for? So different mafarshim, different commentaries say different things. Some say that this would be the same chambers that the Levium had in the second Beis HaMikdash. If you'll recall, on the steps going up, the 15 steps of the Shir HaMalos that were going up to Shar Nikanor, that there were chambers under the steps where they kept their instruments. It is suggested that this was similar over here. They would keep their instruments. They will be keeping their instruments in these chambers. That's a possibility. It may be for another purpose. But that's the chambers of the singers, which would mean the Levium. And now the pasuk continues, Echad el kesef shar ha-kadim, and one other chamber on the shoulder of the east gate, Pnei derech ha-tzafon, facing the north. So there is another chamber, which we haven't yet been told what it's for, but it's on the shoulder of the east gate. This is the east gate. It's on the shoulder of the east gate, so it's on the side of the east gate. No, it's not right in front of it. And it's facing the north. So it's facing the opposite direction of these chambers. Now, we don't know if it was down here. Perhaps it was up here. Perhaps it was over here. It's not clear where it was. But there was a chamber over here. It faced towards the north, and it was on the eastern shoulder. Yeah?
When the lists were being sent, they didn't think, well, things were being ordered, right?
They did.
So, while they were cutting and...
Well, that was going on all the time. That processing animals was going on all the time in the Beis HaMikdash.
And why were they singing just to make things joyful while they were
It's a mitzvah to sing, for them to sing during the service of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. When serving Hashem, the Levim sang to Hashem as it was going on.
So as all these animals were being slaughtered, they're singing of the Levim.
Right. Not just, whatever was going on in the Beis HaMikdash, they would sing. That's right. That's right. Baruch Ato Adonai Eloheinu Melech HaOlam Shehakol Nivra. Now that bottom gate, we haven't yet discovered what it's for. Now the next pasuk, Mem Hei, 45. We've almost forgotten about the Malach, the angel who was leading Yechezkel around. Vayadabra Eloi, and he spoke to me. Zo halishka, this chamber, asher paneha derech hadarom, that was facing towards the south. Now that means the first two chambers that are facing towards the south. La kohanim was for the kohanim. Shomrei mishmeres habayis, those who protect the guarding of the house. Now it calls them kohanim, which is difficult, because we said before it's for the singers, and the singers were Levim. Rashi therefore understands that even though it calls them Kohanim over here, it's referring to the Levim, and the word Kohen means to serve. That's what it means. And here it doesn't mean Kohanim as in the family of Kohanim, rather it means those who serve. In this regard it means serving as singers, and referring to the Levim. Memvav 46, v'halishka asher paneha derech hatzafon, but the chamber that was facing towards the north, which is the bottom chamber, la kohanim shomrei mishmeres hamizbeach, that was for the kohanim, those who guard the guarding of the altar, which is of course the real kohanim, the family of kohanim, heim avnei tzadok, those are the children of tzadok, hakrevim mibnei levi, that were brought forth from the children of Levi, because the kohanim are of course also Levim, it's a subset of Levim, and Hashem l'sharso, to Hashem to serve him. So that chamber was for the kohanim. Now what was it for? What did they do there? Doesn't tell us. What was it for? There are several suggestions made. It may have been where they kept their clothing, the clothing of the kohanim. It may have been where they prepared the chavitim of the Kohen Gadol. The Kohen Gadol had to bring a carbon ola, a carbon mincha, a flower offering, in the morning and in the evening, every morning. It had to be prepared every day. It could be that's where it was prepared. At any rate, there is this chamber. We don't know exactly what it's for, but it's for the Kohanim. Now, they are called B'nai Tzadok, the children of Tzadok. What is that a reference to? So I'm going to give you a short description of what B'nai Tzadok means here, but we will have it later on. Later on we will discuss Tzadok again, but let me give you a little bit of background over here about the Kohanim. Aaron HaKohen, he's the first Kohen. Of course he was also Kohen Gadol. He had how many children? He had four sons. And they are? Okay. They are Nadav and Avihu, Elazar and Isamar. Nadav and Avihu died. They were very, very great. In certain ways, they were greater than Moshe and Aaron themselves, but they died. They died. And Elazar and Isamar were left. So who succeeded Aaron HaKohen as the Kohen Gadol after Aaron died? Elazar. Elazar was the older of the two, and he succeeded Aaron, and Elazar has a very famous son, Pinchas. Pinchas is the son of Elazar. Pinchas ben Elazar ben Aaron HaKohen. Pinchas is the son of Elazar, son of Aaron HaKohen. Okay, so what about Isamar? Well, Isamar was also a Kohen. What about his sons? His sons were also Kohanim. But they did not succeed Aaron as the Kohen Gadol. the Elazar succeeding Aaron as Kohen Gadol when he died, so then Pinchas became the Kohen Gadol. And it remained within the line of Elazar, of the two remaining sons of Aaron, Elazar and Isamar, the Kuhuna Gedola, the high priesthood, remained in within the family of Elazar for many years. Elazar's line as the Kohanim Gedolim, and it's not 100% clear how it was chosen who would be the next Kohen Gadol. But without getting into that, without getting into the details of how that happened, it always remained within his line. In the days of the Shoftim, after Yehoshua died, and the Zakenim, the elders, passed away, then you had this period of time of the Shoftim. The Shoftim lasted, the judges lasted, a little over 300 years, I believe about 350 years, something like that, until the time of Shmuel Hanavi. So Shmuel, then he anointed, of course, the first king Shaul, and followed by the next king David. During the time of the Shoftim, there were certain ways that the Jewish people were not acting the way they should. They weren't terrible, and Mirtz Hashem, one day we'll learn Shoftim, and we'll see the pattern of Shoftim and how it worked, and we'll see how the Jewish people were very, very good in certain ways, but in certain ways they drifted a little bit. That drifting, at a period of time where there were no kings, because it was before the period of time when they were kings, and it was supposed to be a period of time without kings, during that time, there was an expectation that the Kohanim, and especially the Kohen Gadol, would provide a certain degree of leadership to make sure that people wouldn't drift. Apparently, the descendants of Elazar, who were the Kohanim Gedolim, on their level, did not live up to that expectation. I don't mean to say they were Chas V'Shalom Rishayim, evil people, they were not evil, but they didn't quite live up to the level of leading the Jewish people in the time of the Shoftim the way they should have. As a result, Hashem removed the Kohuna Gedola from the line of Elazar, and gave it to the line of Isamar. And who was it in the line of Isamar who was the very famous Kohen Gadol?
Eli.
Right. Eli, who was the Kohen Gadol when Shmuel became a Navi. Eli, the Kohen Gadol, was from the line of Isamar, not from the line of Elazar. And that was a result of this general drifting that happened in the time of the Shoftim. Eli, once he became the Kohen Gadol, the line should have remained with him, and it was his to keep. He could only lose it. And of course, we know the tragic story of Eli's sons, Chofni and Pinchas, and they ended up not living up to their father's example. And as a result, the Kohuna Gedola, it was Shmuel Hanavi had a nevuah, had a prophecy, that the Kohuna Gedola would be removed from Eli's line and go back to the line of Elazar. It would go back from away from Isamar back to the line of Elazar. It didn't happen right away, but in a couple of generations later, actually one generation later, we'll see Mitz Hashem, whenever we learn Shoftim and then learn Shmuel, that in the time of David HaMelech, the Kohen Gadol was Evyasar, and he was from the line of Eli, of Isamar, and in his day, he asked the Urim V'Tumim, he asked Hashem to give him an answer about something on the Urim V'Tumim, on the Choshen, on the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol, and it did not answer him. It did not, the letters didn't light up as they would for a Kohen Gadol. That was a sign that he was being removed from his post, that he no longer deserved to be the Kohen Gadol. He was replaced by Tzadok HaKohen, the one mentioned over here. Tzadok was from the line of Elazar. Tzadok is the person who reinstates the line of the Kohuna Gedola within the family of Elazar as opposed to the family of Isamar. That's who Tzadok is. And from here on in, very often the Kohanim are called B'nai Tzadok. The Kohanim Gedolim are called the children of Tzadok, because it's from his point on that the line was restored to Elazar's line. So Tzadok, therefore, gets, sometimes when you talk about the Kohanim, they're called B'nai Tzadok, the children of Tzadok. And that's what it means over here when it says they are the children of Tzadok who were brought forth from B'nai Levi to serve Hashem. That also supports the suggestion that this lishka, that this chamber, was used to prepare the chavitin, the flower offering of the Kohen Gadol. Because since Yechezkel mentions Tzadok over here, who was the Kohen Gadol, it could be that that's what this chamber was for. It was for the preparation of the carbon of the Kohen Gadol. Remember, Yechezkel himself was also a Kohen. Remember that as well. I don't know what line he was from, but he was also a Kohen. Mem Zion 47. Vayamad es hechatzer, and he measured, he meaning the angel, measured the chatzer, he measured the courtyard. Now we're in the inner courtyard. Orech mea amma, it was 100 amos long. Verochav mea amma, and it was 100 amos wide. Mur ba'as, a square. Famizbeach lifmeha bayis, and the altar was in front of the bayis, in front of the building, meaning in front of the actual inner chamber, in front of the main sanctuary. This is the inner courtyard. It is 100 amos by 100 amos. The mizbeach is directly in front of the heichal of the main sanctuary. This part of the mizbeach is the kevesh, is the ramp. We're not talking about the ramp right now. The ramp is always in the south. We're talking about the actual altar itself, which is a perfect square. Later on in Yechezkel, we will have a very detailed description of the Mizbeach. That's going to be a very important part, a very important feature of the description of the third Beis HaMikdash. A lot of what we know about the Mizbeach is drawn from here. Even what we know about in the second Beis HaMikdash and the first Beis HaMikdash, we draw from here in Yechezkel when he describes the Mizbeach of the third Beis HaMikdash. So it is here, and it is directly in front of the entrance to the Heichal, to the main sanctuary, right over here in the middle, right smack in the middle of the Chatzar HaPnimi of the inner courtyard. Mem Ches 48. Vayevieni el Ulam Habayis. Now he brought me to the Ulam, the entrance hall of the Bayis, of the main part of the Beis HaMikdash. So he makes a right turn and heads to the west and goes to the Ulam Habayis, to the entranceway of the Beis HaMikdash. Now we're going to have a bunch of measurements here, and this is a lot easier if we first describe it on the picture and then read it inside. So let's look carefully, as best as we can, at this picture. To get into the main sanctuary, so there were steps, first of all, and then there was an area here that was between these two walls. The white part is the part you would walk, and you had a space between these two walls. The thickness of the wall, like how much wall was there, I'm not talking about from right to left on our picture, which would be from north to south. I'm talking about how thick was it from bottom to top along that wall. It was 5 amos. It was 5 amos deep, that wall. This area to the right and left, this white area to the right and left, that branches off, a small area here, is not discussed here in Yechezkel. It's discussed later on. Here it's ignored. We're not mentioning it over here. It happens to have been 3 amos deep. I'm talking again from bottom to top, not from right to left, which obviously is a lot longer than 3 amos from right to left. I'm talking about only deep. Then you had the Ulam, the hall. The hall is right over here, and we're going to see the measurements of that Ulam. Then you came to a narrower area, and then you entered into the main sanctuary. So there's essentially, there's one area, which is between the two walls. Second area, which is this narrow passageway. Then you have the hall itself, and then you have another area between two walls before you get into the main sanctuary. Don't worry about these other areas that branch off of the main sanctuary that will be discussed later. So, Yechezkel writes, Vayevieni, again 48, Memches, Vayevieni al Ulam Habayis, he brought me into the main, to the entranceway to the Bayis, to the house, Vayamad el Ulam, and he measured the pillars of the chamber. Chamesh amos mipo v'chamesh amos mipo. Now they weren't actually pillars, it was the walls themselves. As we already described, the thickness of the wall was 5 amos on either side. V'rochav hashar, and the width of the gate, shalosh amos mipo v'shalosh amos mipo, was 3 amos on this side, 3 amos on that side. Now what does that mean, 3 amos on this side, 3 amos on that side? So what that means is, and this is a little bit confusing, it's not the 3 amos that I mentioned here, that's the thickness of this passageway. Let's start from up here. Up here, what is, you see this, which we haven't described, we haven't gotten there yet, but from right to left, the white part here that you're going to walk through to get into the main part of the base of Mikdash was 10 amos wide. Here, this area was 16 amos. It was 3 more amos on the right and 3 more amos on the left. A total of 16 amos. Now you notice, of course, that the ulam, the hall, is even wider on the right and wider on the left. We haven't gotten there yet. That's going to be even wider. So here it was 16 amos between the walls. 3 extra amos on this side, 3 extra amos on that side.
That
yeah. Does it say?
It says 14 amos.
No, so I'm making a mistake. Let me take a quick look at that. Thank you. Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, I was talking that it seemed too much. Let's see quickly. Hold on.
I mean, the 3 is here.
Yeah, right. You're right. You're correct. Okay, you're right. Okay, let's do this again. It's confusing because the depth, I need a more narrow pointer. The depth of this passageway from bottom to top is 3 amos. But we're not talking about those 3 amos. That's not what we're talking about. We're talking about, and thank you, Dina, for correcting me, we're talking about that if you draw an imaginary line from this wall down to here, how much extra space do you have along this wall? You have an extra 3 amos here and an extra 3 amos here. That's what it means. Because from this wall to this wall was 20 amos, and from this wall to this wall, as Dina just said, this was 14 amos. Not 16, like I said, 14. So how much more space did you have on either side once you got through the entranceway and came to the hall? You had an extra 3 amos on the right and an extra 3 amos on the left for a total of 20 amos. So thank you very much. So that's what it is. So as I said, it's confusing because it's also 3 amos here and here. But that's not the 3 amos mentioned over here. How they figured that out, I have no idea. Now, I want you to understand that I want to show you something. You know, I'll show you after we read over here. Rabbi Eisman, who did an unbelievable job in this whole thing, but you understand, he's not the first person to learn and write a commentary on Yechezkel on the third Beis HaMikdash. There were other drawings that preceded him. They weren't drawn with the same precision that, okay, you have it over there, we'll show everybody. But they weren't drawn with the same precision. They didn't have the computer, the ability to write, make it all, to scale and all that. So, here, let's show everybody now. You see this picture here.
What page is it?
XII.
Appendix B. No, appendix B.
In the appendix. This picture here is an old picture. It's an old picture. And several hundred years old, that precedes, today, obviously.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not drawn to scale, but it also is a picture of the third Beis HaMikdash. When Rabbi Eisman wrote his commentary, he took from the previous commentaries, including that picture, and was able to formulate what he did. So it's not easy to do at all, and And a lot of it is conjectural. We don't know that much about it. Rabbi Eisen tried to make it as clear and as precise as he could, but he admits in his commentary that a lot of it is guesswork, or at least it's educated guesswork. So we're getting a basic idea. One more pasuk, Memtes, 49. Orech ha'ulam esrim amah, so the length of the hall was 20 amos, as we just described, because between the walls was 14 amos, and then you have three more amos on either side for a total of 20. The rochav and its width, which means from east to west, which on our picture is from bottom to top, ashtei esrei amos was 11 amos. That's how wide it was. So it was more from right to left than it was from top to bottom. Uvamalos ashayalu elav, and there were steps that you went up to it, which we mentioned before, the amudim el ha'elim, and pillars to the sides, echad mipo, one on this side, and one on that side. So we have, coming into the main sanctuary, there are steps. Rabbi Eisman writes that these steps, there's really no discussion about what the steps look like. Were they square? Were they circular? It's very, very open. There's nothing discussed at all about the steps. I don't believe we even know how many, although it was likely that there were 12. I think Rashi says, I believe Rashi writes that there were...
I'm talking about the 15.
Right. Rashi says 12. Rashi says there were 12. Because in the second Beis Hamikdash, it will be corresponding to the steps that went up to the Heichal, not the steps that went up. You're talking about the steps that went up from the Ezras Nashim to the Ezras Yisrael, right? We don't know where the Levium sang, by the way. And maybe they sang on these steps in the second. Will sing. I keep saying second past tense. Will sing. But at any rate, so you have these steps. Then you have an entranceway that is between the two walls, which is 14 amos wide and 5 amos deep. Then you enter into a hall, which is wider by 6 amos, 3 on either side, so it's 20 amos wide, it's 11 amos deep. And in this hall, there were two pillars. And that's the circles over here, one on the right and one on the left. Two pillars, unlike the pillars that we already had in the gateways that were oval shaped and were actually part of the gates, the oval pillars here. These pillars seem to have been circular, and they will not be connected to the gate. They were just pillars. What are these pillars? So there were two pillars in the first Beis HaMikdash that were called Yachin and Boaz. Yachin and Boaz that Shlomo HaMelech built in the first Beis HaMikdash. These two pillars are meant to mimic the Yachin and the Boaz of the first Beis HaMikdash. That's how Rashi says. The Yachin uBoaz today is when people say Yachin uBoaz, there's a commentary to the Mishnah called Yachin uBoaz, which was written by the Tiferes Yisrael. It was written about a little over 100 years ago, a Pirush to Mishnayos, a commentary to the Mishnayos, and he wrote two commentaries. One was a general commentary, one was more in depth, and he called them Yachin and Boaz. So when people say Yachin and Boaz, that's what they mean today. But the original Yachin and Boaz were two pillars in the first Beis HaMikdash, and we see in Yechezkel, in the third Beis HaMikdash, there will be two pillars as well to mimic those two pillars that were in the first Beis HaMikdash. I was once in a yeshiva, which was a beautiful yeshiva built a beautiful way in Queens, and at the entrance in the yeshiva, there are these two pillars. They don't go up to the ceiling. They're just pillars that end, and they're meant to mimic the Yachin uBoaz, the two pillars that there were in the Beis HaMikdash. So that's what you have here as well. And that, for all you skeptics, that is the end of Perek Mem of chapter 40. Okay, so as I said, for the next 2 weeks we will have a break, and when we come back, Mirz Hashem, we'll get into Perek Mem Aleph. We will begin now that we're into the main sanctuary. We're going to go through the main sanctuary before we come back out and discuss the Mizbech and discuss the altar and some of the other lishkos, some of the other chambers which we have not discussed up until now.